session number 11440, reel 2.
Mr. Walter Hare, reel 2. We'd just got you to Fulford Barracks, and you'd been issued with your uniform. Did you get your kit at the same time?
You didn't. No, you only got your uniform. You weren't issued with the rifle or anything like that. And because you didn't know what to do with it, you see. I mean, we didn't know how to get into it or whatever. While I was there, there was one lad came back with a pair of shoes, boots, and he said, the quartermaster said, these boots don't fit me. And the quartermaster said, there isn't such a thing as boots that don't fit in the army. It's your feet that don't fit the boots. Told him to get away with it. Well, we got into this about room, and there was a corporal there showing us how to get dressed, you see. And we'd packed all our civil clothes up into a bag and labelled them, and they would be sent home, you see. And he showed us how to get dressed. Well, I felt like nothing on earth. But we did a bit of swapping round. A big chap had got a small uniform and a little chap had got a big one. So by the time we'd finished, we swapped round, we all got something that would more or less fit us. And I remember the sergeant said, now, if you go out into the York, the first thing you must remember is you salute an officer. That was the most important thing in the British Army, was to salute an officer, as far as I could gather. So I decided I wouldn't go up because I didn't know who were officers and who were not, you see. So I stayed in the barracks for the night. Well, the next day, we went up to West Hartlepool.
Straight off to join the battalion?
Straight off to join the 4th West Yorkshire.
So Fulford Barracks was the depot of the West Yorkshire at that time, wasn't it?
Yes, that depot, yes. That's where they equipped you, you see.
How many were there of you getting kitted up at the barracks that day?
Oh, there'd be dozens, I should think. I mean, there seemed to be a crowd of chaps there. And some had already got fitted up. And
now, you went off to West
Hartlepool? West Hartlepool, yes.
Still in June, this would be.
Yes.
And did you now know which battalion you were going to at the West
Yorkshire? No, we were in the 4th, and that was a sort of training battalion as well, you see.
In the what?
4th West Yorks, a training battalion. And we were billeted in a workhouse, which was called a gubber. And we did our training there.
Right. Can we have a look at the condition? You were at West Hartlepool for quite a time,
yes,
weren't you?
Yes, yes.
What was the workhouse like as a billet? Could you describe it?
Well, we were in one big long room, you see, and you had your beds, your palliasses laid down in rows along the side, and you're not other facilities, I can remember, with the wash place where we had wash basin, we'd get shaved and that kind of thing.
What were the beds like, the palliasses?
Just palliasses, just straw palliasses,
so
you see.
You didn't have a thing to put them on?
Oh, no, they were all laid on the floor. They were laid on the floor.
And what were the palliasses? They were straw?
They were straw palliasses, and yes, you had two blankets, I think.
Were they comfortable?
Well, I suppose they were more comfortable than sleeping on the boards, but well, you expected that in the army. You didn't expect to live on feather beds.
Did you have any sort of cupboard or anything to put your personal, your kit in?
No, you had a kit bag. So you had a kit bag and everything had to be in there.
So, how was the room heated? Was there any form of heating?
Well, it would be, I expect, you see, but I mean, I don't think we'd need it really.
In June,
no.
What about how was the was there a sort of interior economy business? Did they have to who kept the room clean? Did you do it yourself?
Oh, we did it ourselves. We did our own. Oh yes, and the backyard and everything. You did fatigues, cleaning up, and that kind of thing.
How was that organised?
Well, I just don't know. You just were called upon to do it. It was, there were fatigue parties organised. Well, that happened all through the army life. You were always either on the fatigue of one thing or another. If you weren't, if you volunteered for anything.
What about kit inspections? Did you have?
Yes, we had kit inspections, and you were told how to lay them out on your. You had to be laid in a certain way. Your knife and fork had to be side by side, and everything had to be straight. And you see, and the training we did. There was a kit inspection, yes.
Were they very strict about the order you had to
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They were very keen about it, everything being laid straight. I remember being a bit worried that perhaps I hadn't got my knife and fork exactly straight, you see. And that seemed to be the most important thing, that everything had to be laid out straight.
What would happen if some part of your equipment was missing?
Well, I think that was the problem. They were flogging it with some of them, you see. And they put them on a crime, you know, of some sort of junk, as we used to call it.
Did you ever lose anything?
No.
What about the food? What was the food like at Hartlepool?
I don't know. I've forgotten.
What about your training then? Did you do basic drill to start with?
We marched up and down. We learned how to slope arms and present arms. And order arms, but we didn't learn anything about the war, about what trench was life was like, or what conditions were like in Vast. And I always said, right from the army life, the mistake was we were trained by a sergeant and a corporal who had never been to France. They didn't know anything about war as it was. The new army, they were regular army men. They knew about drilling and that kind of thing, and rope marching, and that kind of, but about warfare itself, they couldn't tell you a thing. I never handled a bomb, a Mills grenade, and like that, so I didn't know anything about that. And I fired 5 rounds of ammunition before I went to France. And that's the only training I ever did.
So, as far as you were concerned, it was just basic drill.
Basic drill.
Drill
and marching, yes. Forming fours and forming two deep.
What did you think at the time of that?
Well, I thought it was a waste of time. And I still think so. Because you can't form fours and slope arms in knee-deep in mud. I think, really, if they'd had somebody who had been to France, perhaps wounded or something like that, who had seen conditions there and could have told us exactly what we were going to face, we'd have been more ready for it, you see. As it was, when we actually got there, it was a complete shock to us to find the war as it was.
You mentioned route marches. Did you go on many route marches?
Yes, that's into most days. We seem to be going on a route march for no apparent reason.
How far would they go?
Oh, 5 or 6 miles, I would think.
And was there a routine? Did they have a rest period?
Oh, you had a rest period, yes. You had to have your full pack on, of course. You could rest at the side of the road, but you could ease it off, you see. But you didn't take it off. You had to keep it there all the time.
And were you allowed to sing? Or
oh, yes, there were no restrictions about that, but nobody wanted to sing, I don't think.
What about the local population, you know, in the Hartlepool area, if you march
through. Well, they were very nice. There were some of them used to invite us in, give us a cup of tea at night or something like that, you see, if you happen to be out. They were very, very friendly with the Hartlepool people.
The other parts of your training, the parts that you felt weren't covered properly, what rifle training do you get? What did they teach you about a rifle?
How to clean it.
And do you remember that now?
Oh, I remember. Oh, yes.
What did they tell you?
Well, you had to be oiled and use your pull through, you see. And I always looked at my rifle because I thought it was one of my main pieces of equipment, you see. And I did in France the same. I always had a good rifle.
So you recognised that was a reasonable thing to spend time to
Yes, shoot. Yes. I was sorry that we didn't do a bit more rifle shooting because I was keen on that, you see.
What did they teach you about rifle shooting? Did you have a theoretical side to it? I mean, did they show you how to aim? And
I expect they did. Yes, they told you to get the tip of the foresight in line with the shoulders of the centre and in the centre of the U-back sight, and that was all.
You didn't have any practice of doing that.
Oh, no, no. Yeah. No, in fact, I only went on the range once and fired five rounds.
Which range was it? The
Yes, there was a Golf Links camp, I think it was. Later on, we moved into tents at golf down on the Golf Links.
Still in Hartlepool?
Still in Hartlepool, yes.
And what, when you went on the range, do you remember much about it? How did you find the rifle in your first five rounds?
Well, I only remember being told to lay down and aim and shoot. And I know there was, I was never on the bus, there was some showing you a flag, what you got an inner or outer, you see, and that kind of thing.
And how accurate were you?
I think I got an inner out of me five.
So just one inner?
I think they were all inners, really. I think they all five were inners. I didn't get a bull. I was a bit disappointed about that, because I thought I was better than I was.
But there was no training in rapid fire or anything like that?
Nothing. Never seen a machine gun.
What about the kick of a rifle? Would that surprise you?
Well, it surprised us when I first shot, yes.
Had you been warned about
No. Only we'd been told to hold it firmly into your shoulder, you see.
What about bayonet fighting? Had you any bayonet training?
A bit, yes. On straw bags, you see, yes.
What did you think of that?
A washout. I shall never have to bayonet a German. I thought I shall never get near enough to one. And I shouldn't feel like doing it if I did.
Was there a bloodthirsty element to the way bayonet training was taught at that time? Because there was some controversy about that.
There was a bit, yes. In you know, they shouted at you, you know, come on, get into it, you see, that kind of thing.
But you had no bomb training at all?
No, never saw a grenade.
Not any theoretical?
No.
No Lewis gun or Vickers training?
Never saw either of them.
Any tactical training? You know, how to advance?
No, never did any of that.
No exercises?
No.
So, were you aware of how bad your time... I know you came as a surprise when you got to France.
Yes.
But were you aware at the time of how inadequate your training seemed to be?
Yes, I always felt that. I always felt we weren't getting the training we needed to actually take part in a war.
Did other people think that in your...
I think a few of us did, yes.
Was there anything else you did at training, other than what you've already...
Route marching was the main thing, and learning to salute. An officer stood there, you had to march past and salute as you went past, you see. And that was, as far as I could gather, the main training that we got was, the keenest thing was to be able to salute an officer.
Did the training improve your fitness?
I think it must, well, I was always fit, you see, so that I don't think it improved it, but it didn't make it any worse.
So, what about looking at, you know, the sort of life you live. How did you get on with your fellow recruits? They'd all be new recruits, were they, in your squad?
Most of them. I remember one chap, a chap called Thornton, I remember him. He was an oldest chap. He was an Irishman, an Irish Liverpool Irishman. And he never ought to have been in the army. I think he was over the age in any case. And he was, there were three or four of our youngsters, like, we helped him. He couldn't fix his bayonet, he couldn't get his equipment together, he couldn't do anything, really. And he happened to go in a tent with us on the Golf Links camp. And we had a bit of talk. And when we got our draft orders, we had a bit of talk together, three or four of us lads. We said, you know, Thornton never ought to go out to France. He's not fit to go. He can't do anything. So we decided we'd have a word with the commandant. I forget who it was now. If we could have a talk to him and ask him if they couldn't arrange to put Thornton on home duty because we didn't think he was fit to go to France. So we asked permission and we had an interview with I think there were three of us, with the officer in charge. I think he was a colonel. We said we thought that Thornton was going on a draft and he hadn't thought to be because we realised he wasn't fit. He couldn't, he wouldn't be able to look after himself, especially when he got to France. And so they did. They took our advance. They put him on home duty. And he was a bit vexed because he wanted to go with us. But we said, no, he wasn't fit to do... He couldn't do anything at all.
Were there many like him, older men?
No. He was, as far as I remember, he was the only... He was an outstanding... Was much, you know, we were all young lads.
I should have asked you before, which company were you in of the force? Do you remember?
I think it was C Company.
And do you remember, were the other, you know, the people who were of your age, were they from a similar sort of background to yourself?
Well, they were mixed lot, I expect. I don't know.
Your perception of them at the time, did you feel that you were pretty much all the same?
We were pretty much all alike, yes.
And how did you get on with them?
All right. Oh, yes. We were friendly.
Did you make any special friends?
Yes, I'd one or two. But then, of course, we all went to different areas when we were drafted out, you see.
So it's difficult to remember the detail of it?
Oh, yes. I don't remember particular ones. Not in England.
What about your the sergeants and the trainers, you know, the instructors?
I remember the sergeant called Redfern and the corporal was called Reynolds.
What were
the
they
trainers.
Like?
They were chaps who knew nothing about the war. They were good drillers. We liked the corporal best because when we used to... when he trained us, he used to take us on the back of the workhouse and... Tell us to sit down behind a wall, out of sight, you see, and have a nice long rest. The sergeant kept us drilling all the time and marching up and down or something like that. But Reynolds used to leave us, let's have a bit of rest. So we liked him best.
Now, you feel that as far as the First World War was concerned, outside of drill, the instructors and the sergeants were militarily incompetent.
Absolutely.
And
yes.
You thought that then?
I thought that then. I haven't changed my mind.
Was there any bullying by them? I mean, were any of them hard men?
Well, they used to shout at you a bit, you know, which we hadn't been used to in civil life, you see.
Did they use bad language, or was it just shouting?
Well, a bit of bang language, yes.
What about
but,
the officers? Did you see much of your
no,
officers?
No, very, very, very little of them.
Other than to salute?
That's right, yes. That was about the only thing we knew about officers. There should things that ought to be saluted.
At the time, in England, did you respect them? I mean, did you have a...
We expected, yes. An officer had to be respected.
But you didn't know them very well.
We didn't know them. No, we didn't know them personally, no.
How did you react to the army lifestyle? You know, the lack of privacy. And the
well, it was a bit upsetting for a start. You see,
why was that?
Well, we'd not been used to living among a crowd of people and having to queue up for everything.
Did that embarrassment last for long? Or
no, you soon got used to it. That was part of your life. You realised that it was. You had to accept it. You see.
What about the discipline? You seem at the time to have been aware that some of what you were doing was a bit of a waste of time. Did you have trouble with the discipline they expected of you?
Well, a few did, yes. A few caused a bit of trouble, you see. But I think I just accepted it. It was part of the army. As far as I knew, that was what you did in the army, and so I did it.
What about guard duties? Did you have to do guard duties?
I never did it in England, no.
What about recreations? You know, what did you do off duty?
Well, we went to the pictures and that's about all, I think. When you'd finish your drilling and goat match and everything, you weren't fit for doing anything, a lot of further exercise.
So you weren't interested in more sport or anything?
Oh, no.
What sort of picture house would it be? Would it be an army picture house or a civilian?
Oh, it'd be a civilian picture house, yes.
And what sort of films were you interested in?
I don't know.
Did you drink at the time?
No, I never have done. And I didn't smoke.
You say the civilians used to take you home for tea and things?
Yes, like some of them did, yes.
Was that common? Or
no, I belonged to a church and I always went to church. And I think that was why... people from the church took us, you see, and during this Second World War, my wife and I did the same thing here. We entertained troops from Pontefract, you see.
So, did you go to the canteens at all?
No.
What about when you were in tents? You've been in the workhouse.
Yes, yes.
How long was it before you shifted to the tents? Roughly.
Oh, I think a couple of 3 months, maybe.
So round about September.
Yes, yes.
Mm. And what were conditions like in the tents for you?
Well, they were a bit rough, with blankets, of course, and there wasn't too bad, really.
Did was it getting cold by then?
No, not particularly, no.
But other than that, it made very little difference.
Very little difference, no, no.
How long in total did your training go on for then in England, in Hartlepool?
Oh, I think about 4 months.
So you went over in what month? When were you drafted?
I think it was December.
So that'd be about 5 or 6.
Yes.
That's a bit early.
Yes, I think it was a bit early because I said there'd been these casualties and they were bunging out a bit quicker.
How did you hear of your drafting?
They just notified us that we had a week's leave. Draft leave, they called it, you see. So we knew we were for it. And I know I came home to Caywood and on the Sunday night, my young lady said, "You've got to go home with me tonight to meet my father." He was a farmer's daughter. And he was a bit of a, you know, I'd never met the father. But in those days, you did, you caught him, you know, quietly, you see. And she said, my mother said, you've to bring that lad home if he's going abroad to meet your father. And so I went. It was all right. He was very nice to me. And I remember he filled me plate. I'd say to him his supper and he filled me plate. He got a slice after slice of beef off a joint and put it on me plate with some cucumber. And I felt quite clear having me there with the family for the first time.
Was there any question of you getting engaged?
No.
Because you were going over?
No, no.
So that wasn't a question that arose?
Oh, no, it never arose, no.
So that was your embarkation leave?
That was my embarkation leave.
And what happened then?
Well, then, of course, I went down to London and from there to Folkestone. We stayed a night in an hotel at Folkestone on the front.
How many were there in the draft?
I think there'd be about a dozen of us.
And did you know where you were going?
No, no idea.
Did you know you were going to the Western Front?
No, we didn't know anything. We didn't even know we were going to London. We were just told we were on our way. So the sergeant took us, you see. We found ourselves in London. And then we transferred into through trains there and we finished up at Folkestone. We stayed overnight in a hotel on the seafront at Folkestone. Next morning, we got on a boat. We didn't know where we were going to. We surmised it would be somewhere in France, you see, with it being down that coast. And it was a calm journey, but as we moved out of the harbour, I remember 2 gunboats fell in at either side of us to protect us across because there was U-boats even in those days, submarines. And I remember there's a lad called Bob Lick. I've just forgotten his name. But anyway, he'd been out before. He'd come back. He'd had trench feet, I think, and he'd been home on sick leave. And I got pally with him. I thought he'd be a useful chap to know. You see, he'd been out before and know the ropes. So we got friendly, and we landed at Folkestone, and the sergeant handed this over to another sergeant. Fellas in and marched us up the hill to St. Martin's camp.
You landed at Boulogne, you mean?
At Boulogne, yes. And he marched us up the hill to St. Martin's camp.
What was your first impression? That's the first time you'd been to France.
What
was your first impression of being in Boulogne?
Well, it was strange to me because the main thing I remember is going up that hill. And we got to the top. And Thaker, Bob Thaker, they called this lad. And when we got to the top, he said, now then, we went to your camp there, you see, a transit camp, and he said, first of all, let's go and get something to eat. I said, well, can you? He said, oh, you can get, he said, it's a transit, you can get food any time here, you see, they're coming in and out all the time, so we went and got something to eat. And then he said, now we'd better find a blanket, you see. So I said, why? So he said, oh, well, you'll have to get a blanket, you know. We'll go to quartermaster stores and we'll do a blanket each. And then he said, we'll have to find somewhere to sleep. I said, oh, there's some huts here with some wire beds in. We'll be in one of those. He said, no, we won't. I said, well, why? He said, no. He said, we're going in the tent. I said, I'm not going in the tent. I've had some at West Hartlepool. I've had enough. He says, we're going in the tent. So he took me to, and he didn't go to the first tent. We went down this row of tents. Went about 7th or 8th, you see. And we got there with 3 or 4 chaps with us. We filled this tent. We got our blankets down. And I said to him, hey, why couldn't we go in that hut? He says, I'll tell you, because he said, there'll be, if there's a sandbag here, they'll put a guard on it. And he said, the sergeant of the guard, he'll come, he said, he won't come looking for those down here. He'll go to the first hut, he'll say, you, and you. He said, you're volunteers for that guard. He said, I've been here before, I know what's going to happen, you see. So I said, oh, guys. Anyway, we got dark and we got to laid down to it, you see. Then I heard somebody, some voices coming. I thought, oh, this sergeant coming and looking for the guard, you see. And I heard him speaking to first one tent, then came to us and he threw the flap open. There was only the two of us. I'm saying there were more. There were only two of us in this tent. He threw the flap open. He says, how many in here? And Bob said, 4. And in came 4 packets of cigarettes. So I said to him, when he'd gone, I said, what did you say 4 for? He said, what are you coming for? You've got 2 packets of cigarettes. You're only entitled to 1. I said, but I don't smoke. He said, well, I'll have them. I said, well, I was afraid they were coming for the guard. He said, no, not likely. They wouldn't come down and search one, you know, one here and one there. So I thought, well, he's a gun chap to have with you, is that me, you see? So, anyway, we got on the next day. I think we stayed there 2 days. And then we went on a train. And we
you did put, no training while you were there?
No, we did no training. No, nothing at all. We were put on a train eventually. We didn't know where we were going to.
You were still with your friend?
Still with my friend. I stuck with him, yes. Bob. We pulled up at Aberville. And it was getting on towards late-ish in the day. And the train stopped. And
What had the train journey been like? Do you remember that?
Yeah, well, we stopped and started. We seemed to be ages getting nowhere.
Were you in the cattle truck style train or in a...
No, we were in a proper proper carriage there, yes.
Was it crowded?
Yeah, oh yes, it was crowded, yes. And there were all sorts of units there. I mean, they weren't all West York, so, you know, it was a mixed bag. We pulled up at Aberville, and the train stopped there, and the driver got out of his cabin and went off somewhere, and Bob said to me, he said, I'll bet he lives somewhere. He'll have gone to see his family. He said, it may be ages before they move off. I said, get away. He said, oh, he will be. He said, I bet it'll be tomorrow before this train goes. They often do that kind of thing. He said, I think we could get down for the night somewhere. There was a YMCA hut there. He said, so we went and we had I think we paid 6 months. We got a blanket and a cup of tea. And we got down on wire beds and had a good night's sleep. And next morning, we found the train had gone without us. There were quite a few of us left. And anyway, they marched to put us on the platform and told us to wait. There'd be a train come along for us later on. There was an office there, carried on, you know. There was a whole crowd of us and missed it. They didn't like we'd done, you see. Got down there for the night. And anyway, a train came later on, and they pushed us in. Got in there. It was a proper carriage. They pushed us absolutely filled. As a matter of fact, I climbed up onto the onto the luggage rack and laid up on there. And then it stopped. Well, it was dark, as far as I could tell, in the middle of a field. The trouble is, my equipment had gone. Everything I had was on the train. You see. Well, they got us out, and it was in a grass field. I suppose it was as far as the train could go, you see. And there was an officer there. He swore at us and told us what a lot of lunatics we were, you see. We took no notice of that. And all our equipment was in a heap on this ground. So he told us to get our equipment and our rifles, you know. So I was searching about for mine, and he came and said, "What are you looking for?" I said, "I'm looking for my equipment." I said, "And Webb's equipment." He said, "Get hold of anything. Doesn't matter what it is. Get some equipment." And I got some awful leather equipment, which I didn't like at all. I lost everything that I'd taken out. My book, my pencil, my diary. Everything. My pack with everything in it, you see. And then the march is off. We did about 4 miles, I think. I found out later it was a place called Ashu, this rail head. It was as far as the train could go because the line was demolished further on with shellfire and that kind of thing, you see. They marched us to a place called Sailly Le Bourse. And we had to wait there.